Did the Revolutionary War violate Romans 13, 1 through 7 on this slice of fresh bread? Welcome to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church, Gainesville, with Pastor Brandon and Pastor Keith. Well, thanks for clicking on Fresh Bread Podcast 68. Fresh Bread, where we're bringing the truth of God's Word to a starving world. I am Pastor Keith. He is Pastor Brandon, and we're recording this podcast on the week of the 4th of July. So I thought it would be fun if we talk a little bit about the American Revolution. And we're going to specifically look at, was the American Revolution a violation of Romans 13, 1 through 7? We all know that the American Revolutionary War was a pivotal moment in world history, really. We know that our founding fathers were religious men, so I don't know if they were Christians, all of them, but they were religious. So they rebelled and went against British, and we had a war. I'm going to ask Pastor Brandon, and we're just going to talk about that. We're going to bring it into maybe today as well with our country and what's going on, what could happen this fall and in the future, and so we'll see where this takes us. So anyway, Pastor Brandon, it's kind of a big question, but was the American Revolution a violation of Romans 13? What do you think?
Well, I think that's a very complicated question that, you know, there's Christians who come down on both sides in terms of whether it was biblical or not, or a violation of Romans 13. I mean, Romans 13, just for our audience.
Do you want to read it?
Yeah, I think I can read that. Basically, it's Paul writing to the church at Rome, and he says, every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. And those which exist have been appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists that authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. Then he gives an explanation of that, and, you know, that ultimately rulers are not, well, I can just read it, for rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of the authority or that authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same, for it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword in vain, for it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Therefore, it is necessary to be in subjection, not only because of that wrath, but also because of conscience. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. Render what is to all what is due to them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. And so, you know, there's a couple of things that we probably ought to point out about this. You know, he's speaking to individual Christians. He's speaking to the church at Rome, or he's writing to the church at Rome, but he says in the very beginning, you know, every person is to be in subjection to, or every soul is another way to translate that, but every person or soul is to be in subjection to the governing authorities. And then ultimately there is no authority except from God. So it's God who establishes that authority. I think what makes it complicated with Revolutionary War is that it's not one person who is rebelling against the government. It's not, I mean, Paul is speaking to each person. And so, you know, it's interesting for a Christian, and you and I talked, you know, before we started this podcast, we talked at length about this and kind of what we thought and which direction this was going to go. But, you know, the question is, and the question on that really has to be answered is, when you have a group of people, are they entitled to self-government? And that really was what our founders were dealing with. Are they entitled to self-government? What we have to recognize is that the Revolutionary War didn't start, you know, like on a whim. I mean, there was things that led up to the Revolutionary War. You know, there was actually several events that that happened that led up to the Declaration of Independence. There were seven different events that led up to the Revolutionary War. It started in 1765, those events, with the Stamp Act, the Stamp Act of 1765. And really, ultimately, you can track this all back to what is called the Seven Years' War. And it was the English or the British government who came in and protected the colonists from the Indians. And so, they felt like they had spent a lot of blood and their money, treasure, to protect the colonists from the Indians. So the colonists needed to pay their share. And so that, from their point of view, they had, had this big investment in the colonies. Therefore, they felt like that they should be able to tax the colonies. And ultimately, the colonists didn't see it that way and resented the fact that they had to not only had to buy their goods from the British, from Britain, but they had to pay tax on them as well. And so and they were forced to pay this tax. And so, they pushed back on that. And ultimately the British rescinded that, but there was certainly lingering hurt from that situation or hard feelings from that situation. And then in 1767 there was something called the Townshend Act. The crown established a board of customs commissioners to stop smuggling and corruption among the local officials in the colonies. And so again, they were asserting their authority in the colonies, which enraged the colonists. From there you had the Boston Massacre, which is in 1770. The Boston Massacre was basically seven soldiers who were surrounded by 200 colonists, and the colonists were taunting them and throwing things at them, and so the soldiers lost their cool and began to fire into the crowd. And when the smoke cleared, there was three deaths that occurred. Three men were dead, and two others were mortally wounded. And so, the colonists used that, especially Paul Revere, used that as sort of a rallying cry, a propaganda tool, against the British government. So that's in 1770. In 1773, you have the Boston Tea Party, and where they had passed the Parliament had passed a Tea Act, and to help the British East India Company. And so the Americans didn't like it, and they obviously know the story of them disguised as Mohawks boarding three ships in the Boston Harbor and destroying 92,000 pounds of British tea by dumping it into the harbor. They avoided harming any of the crew. They didn't damage the ships, but they even replaced a padlock that had been broken, but they did destroy the tea. So that escalated things. And then you had the coercive acts of March through June of 1774, where they closed the Boston Harbor and until restitution is paid, for the tea that they had destroyed. And so then, basically they had called the Quartering Act, where they had allowed British military officials to demand accommodations for their troops in unoccupied houses and buildings in town rather than having to stay in the countryside. And so it didn't force the colonists to board the troops, but they had to pay the expense of the housing and feeding the soldiers. So the quartering of troops really became, one of the major grievances of the Declaration of Independence. Then it escalated even more in Lexington and Concord, and where there was a force of British soldiers who were led by Thomas Gage. He planned to capture the radical leaders of the rebellion, Sam Adams and John Hancock. And then he was going to go and seize their gunpowder, but spies got wind of that. And, the famous Paul Revere ride, spreading the word to be ready for the British. The British are coming. The British are coming. And so then the force was confronted by some militiamen, and there were seven Americans who died, but they were able to stop the British. The British lost 773 and they 174 were wounded and 26 missing in action. So pretty significant situation there in Lexington and Concord that happened sort of as an escalation to this. And then you have, you know, British attacks that began, you know, happening, but definitely it was escalated, you know, with some attacks that happened on coastal towns between 1775 and 1770, really October 1775 and January 1776. What I really wanted to say is this isn't as cut and dried as, you know, I mean, it was a gathering situation that happened over a course of several years, you know, from 7 Years' War earlier, you know, earlier from that, but then the Stamp Act in 1765, all the way to, you know, what happened with the Boston Tea Party in 1773, what happened with the Coercive Acts in 1774, the Lexington and Concord in 1775, and then ultimately culminating in these attacks on coastal towns, you know, that was happening at the end of 1775, 1776. Of course, the Declaration of Independence was signed on July 4th, 1776. So just to kind of give us the timeline and, you know, of how it escalated.
It sounds to me as if there was no real reason other than maybe money.
Well, money, power, control, you know, the question, I mean, you know, you have to pay for government and you have to pay for wars. You have to pay for, I mean, there's a cost involved, and you know, the 7 Years' War was clearly, I mean, obviously Britain came in and they, you know, they funded that war and they did expect, I think, that the colonists would pay their part, but then they began to pass these laws. And so you get into taxation without representation, mm-hmm. you know, so they didn't have any choice in the matter in how that would happen. And so really it, I mean, there's money that's involved. There's politics that are involved. Who, you know, who does what and who has the authority to do what. And so it's a convoluted situation. And I think what we have to recognize as we answer this question of whether or not it was against Romans 13, I think what we have to recognize is that it isn't as cut and dried as maybe we think that maybe we want to make it. And I would argue that Romans 13 absolutely applies to the individual citizen. But, you know, where it gets problematic is that then you start dealing with it at this level and wrongs that are done, you know, in that situation. And while I, as a citizen I'm bound to answer to the authority that I have, that God has placed over me. The problem is that there are people that are, my neighbor doesn't necessarily carry that same belief, and, you know, a group of neighbors. So, you know, I think we could even, you know, apply it to our situation today. And there's a momentum that happens in a society as things roll out, as things begin to occur. And I think that we're in the midst of that kind of momentum at this point, where the government is doing certain things, and you have, you know, things that are happening in response by the citizens, and then you have the government responding, and then you have the citizens responding. And, you know, we're seeing that very situation today. And the question then for the individual Christian is, how do I react in the midst of this momentum being gathered? How do I handle it, you know, in the right way before the Lord as the momentum goes one way or the other?
Right. And we've talked about, it's hard for us looking back because we weren't living through it. And sometimes a difficult decision to make as you're going through it, because as I look at the American Revolution, I mean, you have English preachers like John Wesley, who, you know, wrote all those great hymns. He was saying, look, pacifism is what we have to do. There should not be a rebellion against Great Britain. And then you have John Witherspoon on the other side and Jonathan Mayhew. They were saying, yeah, let's secede. Let's form our own nation. So you have both sides, Christian men, looking at it. Like from what you were saying, it's a tax thing, but it was also who governs us? Do we govern ourselves?
Yeah. And well, yeah.
I can see both sides. When you talk about the British funding the Seven-Year War. I understand Britain wanting compensation for that. Look, we're protecting you. You're part of us, so you owe us. I understand that, but it almost seemed like, and we've talked about this before, where King George, and I don't know if it was just King George or Parliament, but it almost seemed like they were tightening the screws on the colonists because there were so much resources that they could gather from you know, the new America, lumber. Yeah, I mean, and
you gotta ask yourself, well, tobacco, I'm sure, was part of that.
Yep.
You gotta ask yourself whether or not, yeah, whether the king was right or Parliament was right to tighten the screws like they did. You know, if you read the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson and the men that were involved with that, you know, they made it clearly a situation of whether or not a country has the, or a people have the right for self-government. And, you know, they argued that all men are created equal. They argued from creation that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain and unalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. So he's basically saying that government is necessary to secure the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Citizens have the right to pursue life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, but ultimately that's the reason government exists. And therefore, you know, the government then has those powers from as a consent of the governed. And so Jefferson goes on in the Declaration, says that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of those ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall not seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. So the point that he's making is the question that he's raising, and where I think that, and really the kernel of this is whether or not a people have the right to self-government, whether or not they have the right to abolish a government that is infringing on their ability to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Right. And I think Jefferson and the rest of the colonists made sure that you see that in the documents, that they saw themselves not as anti-government, but anti-tyranny. They're not promoting anarchy. They're simply forming a new government, that they still support God's institution of government, but they believe their actions were specific against the regime that was in violation of Romans 13. And that's kind of what they were looking at, right?
Yes. I mean, they were basically looking at basically the king and the parliament, the king of Great Britain and the parliament. And they're saying, I mean, he goes on to say the history of the present king of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. That was the statement. Then he goes into several reasons why that they say that he's forming an absolute tyranny. And it really all boils down to this representation, the fact that the colonies had legislatures that were governing these colonies, and that the king was doing things, the king and parliament were doing things to usurp the authority of these legislatures, which had been basically established by the colonists themselves. And so the king was doing different things. We could go through each of those, but probably isn't fruitful to go through each one of those. But ultimately, all we have to remember is that the colonists had set up their own legislatures and to rule the colonies. And the king and the parliament of Great Britain was opinion of Jefferson and those who declared the independence that they were usurping the authority. The king and the parliament were usurping the authority of the legislatures. And as they continued to make laws, they became more and more tyrannical in those laws in order to keep control over the colonies.
Yeah. And I think that's why they felt like they weren't violating Romans 13, because they saw it more of as a defensive action, right? It was not an offensive war.
That's right. I fully believe that. Well, I think if you ask yourself, and it's funny because Brian Biedebach did a sermon /talk back in 2017 at Grace Community Church. I listened to that this morning in preparation and for this. And, you know, he said, had they not fought the Revolutionary War, ultimately the United States would have become free and sovereign anyway, because the other territories of the British Empire became free and owned their own sovereign states outside of, without shedding blood. And so the, you know, and so you could argue that the colonists could have stood down and that would have stopped this, but they didn't. They asserted their independence, which then you could argue, was Britain correct in being the aggressor at that point? And do they become the aggressor at that point? And I, again, that becomes a convoluted, becomes a very difficult, I shouldn't say convoluted, I should say becomes a very difficult question to answer. You know, it, you know, it's, and it really doesn't come down to even how, you know, who fired the first shot, you know, kind of idea. And I mean, because you could argue, these soldiers, these seven soldiers in that crowd, you know, the soldiers fired on the crowd, and, you know, that was the first shot, that was the first shed blood, and, you know, and Britain went that direction. But I don't think it's as simple as that. I don't think we can boil it down to that. I think you have to boil it down to whether or not it was worth fighting a war, whether or not it was worth shedding blood over a people saying we want to be independent. And I think that ultimately it wasn't, and Britain shouldn't have continued to force the hand. And when you begin to look at the motivation had to be money. It had to be, as you said earlier, it had to be sawmills, and, you know, it had to be lumber and you know, commerce, and, you know, that sort of thing, what they stood to gain from having these colonies and what they didn't want to lose. And so, yeah, should the men have who declared independence, should they have stood down when Britain said, you know, we're gonna fight for this? Well, as an individual, I can't tell you that Jefferson and the others were right in moving forward, but I certainly can't tell you that Britain was right in resisting them from being able to declare independence either.
Yeah.
And so that, I mean, obviously the shedding of blood is wrong, and, you know, that war over those kind of, you know, that kind of situation, I don't think is right. But it's hard to say who actually is to blame in that situation.
It's a tough one, because we were talking about if we were living in that time, and I was always in favor of the Revolutionary War, because I love the 4th of July. I love picnics and things like that. We wouldn't have that if we hadn't done it. But I think it brought the nation together. Like you said, Biedebach, you said if we had just waited another 200 years or 100 years, we would have been gathered at freedom too. But as far as what was happening, as far as, it's been a long time since I've been in the history classes in college, which I remember sitting in those, it was always interesting. But the colonists reached out and said, how about if you let us govern ourselves a little bit, give us a little more freedom? We'll continue to pay our taxes, whatever you want us to do. But it almost seemed like Britain was like, no, you're going to be under us, and you're going to do what we tell you to do. And these men who are living here across the Atlantic were saying, we can govern ourselves better than they can. And so we need to break free of this. And it was a decision. And to me, when I look at the United States of America, it was so unique, because every nation had a king or some kind of ruler. And these guys are all sitting there in a room saying, let's not have a king, but let's elect a president every 4 years. And he can, you know, he'll serve these terms. So we can have a Senate and a House where the people actually represent themselves. It had never been done before. It was like a great experiment. I don't see it as a violation of Romans 13 at that point, just simply because I'm kind of on the side of the tyranny. And I look at Samson, I look at some of the judges when we go back in the Old Testament and who fought against evil kings. You know what I mean? There's precedent, sure, in the Old Testament of that. And like you said too, I think it's hard for us to look back and say this was right or this is wrong because we didn't live through it.
Well, and I mean, if you think about it from an individual Christian point of view, and we can actually see this today, I think, you know, in terms of how we respond, you know, do we submit to the government? Absolutely. That's Romans 13. Is there a point where the government oversteps their bounds? Absolutely. That's, you know, we're not to obey the government if they tell us to go murder people, or we're not to obey the government if they, you know, want us to do things that would be against what God's will would be, you know, what God's revealed will would be. And so we have the right to do that, but that's a matter, really, it comes down to a matter of conscience. When things are gathering momentum and there's people talking on both sides and you're trying to figure it out, as an individual Christian, I mean, I think I need to submit to whatever the governing authority is. But at the same time, I need to recognize that in these times where there's upheaval, you know, in the world, it isn't necessarily as clear cut. If we were in that situation today and living in Boston, you know, where all this is going on, I mean, you own property there, you have a business there, you are, you know, you're trying to make ends meet. And, you know, this is going on with the British Parliament, you know, and you're saying, I can't live if I can't have a good business, if I'm having to pay these taxes and all that. And, you know, you have to make the best decision you can at that moment. And it's a matter of conscience, really. I mean, should I obey the governing authorities? Well, the Bible says I should. And yet you have this situation going on where you have this group of people where this momentum is going on, and you have Parliament that, you know, things are happening in the British Parliament, and you have this, you know, things that are happening in the legislature, and the British Parliament is suspending the state or the colonist legislatures, and all this is happening, and it becomes really a confusing situation. And I think as a Christian, I need to do the best I can to obey the government, governing authorities as best I can. But I need to realize that in these situations of upheaval, that becomes very difficult and could even be changing from day to day to day. I mean, in terms of what the actual situation is. And, you know, I may not be even contributing to it. I'm just trying to live my life. You know, I'm trying to deal with, you know, what's happening today. I'm trying to feed my family. I'm trying to make, you know, decisions that are right for my family. And so it, you know, if I'm looking at it from that point of view, it becomes very difficult to really parse through, you know, what that even looks like. And so, you know, it you brought up, was it the McLean family in the Civil War? And by the way, there are definite parallels between the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. So I think we could kind of bring that in. I think it's probably a different discussion because it's opens up a whole different kettle of fish, so to speak. But you know, there was a family you brought it up earlier, there's a family in the Civil War that was there at the beginning and there at the end.
Yeah, the McLean, his name was Wilmer McLean. His house was on the first battlefield of the Civil War, and he was just a farmer who, you know, he wanted to stay out of it. But the Civil War started in his field, right in front of his house. So he moved his family to Northern Virginia to get away from the war. And then, of course, it ended in his farm where Lee signed the surrender paper. So it kind of began and ended right there with someone who was trying to avoid it. So the moral of that story is you cannot be neutral. It's going to find you out. The war is going to find you out. It's kind of like the movie The Patriot with Mel Gibson, where he tried to avoid, you know, fighting in the Revolutionary War, but, you know, ended up taking his son, and it messed up his whole family. I was going to ask you the question, if you're living in 1776 and you're submitting to the British government, really is your, that's who's ruling you. But then once the United States is formed and they sign the Constitution, they do all that. Now, who are you submitting to? It has to be the government that, I guess you'd have to recognize the new government, submit to them. They're now in a war against your former. So you can't just sit there and say, I'm going to be neutral, because like you said, it's going to affect you some way, right?
Yeah. And I actually haven't thought this through, you know, I haven't thought it through in any depth, but you know, so there's always a danger of answering when you haven't thought through it in any depth, but maybe you can help me with this. But it would seem to me that, you know, to the best of your ability, that you're going to submit to whatever your local authorities are doing. You know, obviously you should have say at the local level, right? You should be able to, you know, that if in a situation like this, let's just say we live in Alachua County and you know, we live in Florida and Florida secedes from the Union. And that's something that the secession has been talked about, you know, over the past several years with, you know, what's happening in our world today. You know, it would seem to me, just as I think it through, that I would still be responsible to answer to the local authorities and whoever the local authorities are answering to, you know, in terms of, you know, the state of Florida. And, you know, if the state of Florida has seceded and it's the governor now that's really leading us, you know, they're submitting to that. And so I'm responsible really to submit, you know, on a local level to whoever, you know, is governing my home, you know, whoever is the governing authority of my home, of my property that I'm living as part of. And so really, as I think Romans 13 for me would be fulfilled in answering to, you know, whoever is in charge of my, you know, area, if you will. You know, if it's Alachua County, then whoever's in charge of Alachua County, whoever is that lesser magistrate, the that's in charge of Alachua County, I would have a responsibility to answer to them, unless, you know, they're doing evil things. And, you know, if, let's just say, as an example, we're invaded, and now the governing authorities is something completely different, and it's someone who is governing in an evil way. The only way I would be permitted biblically to rebel against them would be if they are telling me to do something evil. Like if they're saying that, you know, as an example, going back even to the Jews and let's just say that there was a situation where they were hunting down all the Christians and, you know, they were wanting to get rid of all the Christians, you know, a situation that happened with Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. As they came in, as they took over, they're hunting down, you know, the Jews, and they're trying to get rid of them. I wouldn't participate in that, right? I shouldn't participate in that. And that, Corrie Ten Boom and her family is a prime example where they hid people, you know, that they hid Jews that were, mm-hmm. you know, they were being pursued. That's ultimately why they got thrown in jail. And so, you know, they were right to do that, right? But in every other way, you know, in terms of where they can obey, they should obey and do what they, you know, the local authorities are commanding us to do. You know, I obey where I can obey, right? But I disobey where I have to. And so, you know, I think that's really ultimately, if you think about how that would work its way out as an individual Christian, I just have to obey, you know, whatever my local authority is, I need to obey that, unless, you know, they're asking me to be, you know, to do something sinful, like give up, you know, someone like a, you know, based on the color of their skin or based on their nationality, that sort of thing.
So can I ask you, I always wondered this too myself, why in Nazi Germany, I know this is away from the Revolutionary War, but it's kind of similar because we may be heading into this situation. The Jewish people were submitting to whatever the government said. We're gonna put a star on your business, and then they went to put them in ghettos, and then they put them in trains and shipped them to a camp. So why didn't the Jewish people and other Christians say, "Look, this isn't right"?
They should have, because that, you know, obviously the Germans weren't necessarily outward and saying this is what it's going to lead to, But at some point, you have to go, well, there is a point where you have to say, we can't keep going this direction. It's that this is tyranny, which then brings it back to, you know, the Revolutionary War. At some point, you are responsible to say, this is tyrannical, and you've overstepped your bounds. You know, now you could add, you could say, well, you know, the Brian Biedebach answer was, is that, you know, I don't, that it sounds like his answer would be they hadn't crossed that threshold of tyranny, that they, even though they were taking over the legislatures, even though they were even suspending legislature, that wasn't tyrannical enough. But then you take that to its ultimate end, which is, you know, even the Nazi situation. Nazis, you know, through war came in, took over this area, you know, in Europe, and, you know, they obviously instituted their own government. So you have individual Jews that are submitting to it, and, you know, they're trying their best to live according to, you know, now this German rule. You know, now they're having to put stars on their uniform, their businesses, and even put a star, I guess, even on themselves, and to show that they were Jewish. And then, you know, then they ended up getting moved into these ghettos, and then ultimately moved out. I mean, at some point, you know, there does need to be a point where you say enough is enough. I mean,
yeah,
you've gone to this is now tyranny. This is now beyond what we can accept. You know, that now you are obviously now you're shipping people off to these concentration camps. And, you know, there's a question, like I say, Germany didn't necessarily, I don't think they necessarily advertised that these are trains to the concentration camps. And a lot of people claim they didn't even know, you know, and yeah. I mean, and that's how it's depicted in some of the things that I've seen. I mean, again, these things become very convoluted is probably the right word. How do you know what's right, you know, as you're going through these difficult situations? And ultimately, you're just making the best decisions you can based on the information you know, based on conscience. And it's hard for us. That's where I, you know, we get into these questions of whether it was right for Jefferson and the others to declare independence. You know, can I say that there wasn't sin on Jefferson's part along with the other guys who signed the Declaration? No, I can't. They had their own motivations, and some of those motivations very well probably were sinful. On the other side, can I say that Britain was right and the king and the parliament was right in doing the things that they did? No, I think they were motivated by money and power. And so, you know, you have these situations. And so as a Christian, we're caught kind of in the middle. And how do you deal with that? How do you, as a matter of conscience, how do you live through that? And sadly, I think that we're going to go, I say, you know, sadly, I think that we could very well be facing something so very similar, you know, that it's interesting because, you know, in 100 years, looking back on this time, if, you know, if the Lord doesn't return before then, are they going to look back on, you know, the election of Donald Trump in 2016 and the election of Joe Biden in 2020 and the situation with January 6th and, you know, now, you know, what happened with the, you know, there's all these things that are happening in our, that are really outside of our control. You and I have no control over any of these things that are happening. And so, like, I mean, all I can do is respond as an individual citizen to what's going on. And ultimately I'm submitting to the authority that's in charge, and, you know, and I'm doing what's right before the Lord by my conscience. And that's ultimately all I can do, and make the best decision I can make based on the information I have, you know, as things unfold. That's really all I can do. And then hope that at the end of it, I end up standing in the right place, which is where the Lord would have me stand. So, you know, it's interesting because I think this all kind of goes back to Genesis 50:20. We talked about it before we started, but, you know, Genesis 50:20, that God, you know, you intended it for evil, God intended it for good. Speaking of, you know, Joseph speaking to his brothers and selling him into slavery. But I think that's a principle that we really as Christians need to hold on to. It's easy for us to say the Revolutionary War. It would be easy for us to say the Revolutionary War was sinful, it'd be easy to say, well, it was the colonists' fault. It was those on our side, basically the United States. It's, you know, on that side that we're wrong. Or it's easy for us to sit and say that the British government was wrong. But ultimately, the result of it all, and you brought it up earlier, we live in the United States. The result of it all is God's glory, right? God gets the glory at the end of it all. And he brought these things to pass by his sovereign decree. And, you know, we can sit here and we can talk about history and we can talk about whether it was right or wrong or all that. But ultimately, what we have to recognize is God allowed, or not just allowed it, he decreed it to happen so that the United States would become a sovereign nation, so that his purposes would be fulfilled, so that he would get all the glory ultimately. And as a Christian, we need to see it that way. And, you know, and we need to apply that even to questions of even the Civil War. And, you know, we can look back on it and we can look on the history of it and we can debate whether the South was right or the North was right. You know, whether all that, we, you know, you and I again talked about that before this podcast. We can debate all that, but ultimately the North won. The Union was preserved, and that was God's purpose and plan. And as Christians, we need to recognize that, and we shouldn't continue to be divided as Christians over that question, because ultimately God's plan was brought to fruition, and that was for his glory.
Yeah, and if you look at the United States, God, it may be as simple as God raising up the United States to send missionaries out, because it, you know, the Christian message was spread. And also World War I, World War II, without the United States, World War II, we'd all be speaking German. And I am German, but I don't speak German. But, you know, that may be the reason it's been raised up. And now we see things kind of dwindling down. The United States is purpose may be over. We don't know for sure, but,
or we could end up another, you know, century. I mean, I that's the thing, is that I don't mean to cut you off, but I think that you're exactly right. We have to see these things in God's sovereign plan, and we have to see them from his point of view, not from, you know, an American point of view, a British point of view, a German point of view. Ultimately, God is shaping all of this for his glory according to his sovereign plan. And you bring up missionaries in it, and you have to recognize the redemption piece of that. I mean, that's really the primary piece of all of this, is that, you know, God's plan of redemption. And right now that is through the church.
Yeah. And it is a complicated thing. Like, it, when you're a kid in school, yeah, the Revolutionary War is cut and dry. Yeah, I would have grabbed a musket. But when you look at biblically, is it a violation of Romans? There are men on both sides. You know, John MacArthur, we have talked about it before. He's come out and said, look, should never have happened. I'm still kind of leaning on, yeah, I think it was time. I think it was something that needed to be done.
Yeah, based on what I'm saying in terms of God's sovereignty, the Revolutionary War was fought. God has brought good from it. You know, he brought about good from it. And it's not up to me to judge those people, whether they were right or wrong. It's history, and it is how it happened. And I would say, in terms of, if you're just being fair about it, I would say that there was definitely sin on both sides, that King George III and the British Parliament was wrong. They were oppressive. They pushed the colonists to react. The colonists did react. In some ways, they reacted sinfully. And, you know, it again, is that right or wrong? It's obviously, anytime you react sinfully, it's wrong. But then God used all of that for his glory to bring about the present result, and which is exactly what Joseph told his brothers. And so, you know, you could go back even to the people in Egypt, and, you know, Israel in Egypt, where they write to rise up against the Egyptians and basically declare independence from the Egyptians. And, you know, and obviously scripture shows scripture actually shows that to have happened, and it was of God. You know, God actually sent the plagues, and, mm-hmm. you know, sent Moses and the plagues and that sort of thing. Now, is that the same as the United States declaring independence from Britain? I mean, you be the judge. It's not outside of precedence that a people would declare independence from another people. And obviously in the situation in Egypt, the people were being oppressed. You know, he was dealing, I mean, the situation with, you know, the babies being born and the midwives and the slavery that they were under. And, you know, that was actual oppression. Whether or not the situation in the United States had risen to anywhere near that level, again, you know, where's the line? You just had to be a judge of that on your own. But thankfully, we're not living through that, so I don't have to make that decision. I don't have to say one way or the other. So.
Yeah. Can we look at it as simply that it was God's purpose and God's will because the United States did win one of the biggest upsets in war history?
Yes.
That it was God's will?
Yeah, I think it is God's will. I mean, it is God's will. It happened.
I mean, how in the world could a bunch of colonists defeat the most mighty Navy, army in the world?
Yeah, because, you know, that's what God willed to happen. And I think that's how we have to land here. I think we brought up the Civil War a couple of times, and I don't think we need to go into the Civil War, but there are definitely parallels between the Revolutionary War and the Civil War. And we need to be consistent in our thinking in terms of both, right? You and I can have another podcast at some point if we want to do that. But we do need to be consistent, because if we say that the people of the Revolutionary War were right to stand up for their own governance, then to be consistent, you'd have to say the South was right. So it at least in my mind.
And then we can ask the question, same question you just asked: who won the Civil War?
Who won the Civil War was the North, and ultimately.
So was that God's will for them to rebel?
Well, it was God's will that the North won the war, and that, you know, it was His will and for His glory. And so, ultimately, it's the same answer or same question, and it's really the same answer. That, you know, it at the end of the day, when we look back, it doesn't matter who was right or who was wrong, in the sense that God is the one who chose for it mm-hmm. to happen and for His purposes. And, you know, let's face it. I mean, He brought about good from it, right? The slaves were freed, and it was another step, you know, in the right direction in freeing, you know, slaves in America, but also in terms of the British Empire and there's just, you know, you had the abolishment of the slave trade back in the 1700s. And then you had the Civil War and, you know, in the 1860s. And so, you know, together with both of those things, you ultimately end up with a free population of people that were formerly enslaved. And then obviously, you know, there was some stuff that, you know, the 20th century as well. We don't want to get into that at the moment, but yes, God brought about a result that was good and for His glory. You know, whether you agree with the South or whether you agree with the North, it doesn't matter that God used it for His, you know, according to His plan, for His glory. So,
yeah, but we were saying these are complicated issues, but we just want to wish everyone a happy 4th of July
and shooting off your fireworks and
right. And enjoy that time, because I really love this country and I've grown up that way. So I'm happy we're going to be having a 4th of July party. But again, it's complicated, but like, we should talk about the Civil War sometime.
Yeah, I think that would be a great discussion, a biblical discussion about the Civil War.
Let's say the President Biden wins in the fall and they start rounding up Christians and taking them to FEMA camps. Are we going to fight back on that, or are we just going to submit and go to the FEMA camps? And I hope I'm in a cabin next to yours, but.
I don't know. You know, obviously we hope it doesn't happen, and we hope that the right, you know, goodness and mercy prevails. And
yeah.
Whatever that is.
Yeah. Well, happy 4th of July, everyone. I tell you what, I'm tempted to go buy a musket right now.
Yeah, well, I don't know if a musket's going to do it.
Maybe a cap gun. You've been listening to Fresh Bread, a podcast ministry of Grace Bible Church Gainesville. For more information, go to gracegainesville.org. And thanks for listening.